So last Sunday, or last weekend, I was down in a church just outside of Paris, Texas, a little rural community church, a little smaller than our church. It's as I mentioned, it's kind of a little bit of a different world there. When you go into the church, they had these signs on all the doors that said, please be respectful, no open carry of firearms. Conceal and carry are welcome, though. And so when I was asking the pastor, I said, does that mean that there's people here packing? He goes, oh, yeah. He says, there's a lot here with a lot of guns. And they carry them wherever they go. And actually, you just walk into some people's houses and you see their guns. They have like 22s loaded by the front door because they shoot coyotes and armadillos and salesmen. I don't know. So, you know, there's a variety of things that they do. And and we were sitting down there, and we were having chili, and I take a bite of that chili, and my face is turning red, and I looked at them, and I said, I'm sure this is probably mild to you, but this is really hot to me. And they said, this is hot, you know. And they were just talking about how they toned it down just for me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you could have dialed it down a little bit more, too. And so, you know, when you go through and you see, you know, sometimes we focus on the differences of people, but when we had our meeting and we sat down and we started talking about church, they had the exact same concerns, the same exact fears, the same exact wonders that we do, you know, here in the suburban Baltimore. And so, you know, today as we start off our series of messages during the month of February about loving our neighbor, we're going to start with the idea of recognizing our shared humanity. I think that's where we kind of start missing out on this whole idea of really loving somebody else, is because we fail to recognize that we all share this thing, but that we're human. That we all share this thing that we need Christ. That we have this thing that we have all sinned. That we have all fallen to the short of the glory of God. And when we start recognizing our shared humanity, we start recognizing those similarities, and we start being able to have a heart that is actually starting to want to reach out to someone else. And it is a part of our whole relationship to God, and actually it is in summing up all the commandments of the Bible, it's loving God and loving others. I mean, it's really a very simple summary. And actually, in Luke chapter 10, verse 25, verse 37, a lawyer, you know, is questioning Jesus, and he says this, he stood up to put him, Jesus, to the test, saying, teacher, what shall I do to inherit the eternal life? And he said to him, Jesus replying, what is written in the law? How do you read it? And he answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. So there's the first commandment. We're to love God with all of our entire being. And then the second one is, and your neighbor as yourself. As yourself. And there's that humanity aspect that we are human, that we are in this together. It doesn't matter what race we're from, what country we're from, what our political stripe is. We all have this shared thing about being human. And he said to him, you have answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But, you know, Jesus was being tested by a lawyer, and the lawyer wanted to kind of finesse the answer a little bit more. So he goes on and he says this. But he, referring to the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Because if I'm going to have to love my neighbor, I'd like to know who my neighbor is, because I'm going to love them. And this is how the religious people at that time would think. Well, I love my neighbor, but I don't really have to love my enemy. I don't have to love somebody else. My neighbor, that's okay. I get that. So now he's asking, well, who is my neighbor? Because, you know, we like to get that list as short as we possibly can. And Jesus replied to him, and he tells this parable. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. So here, this guy's traveling, he's robbed, he's left on the side of the road, you know, probably just a bloody mess. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So here's a religious leader, one who teaches, love your neighbor. Love God, love your neighbor. He's the one that would actually help people understand what that means. And he sees this guy leaning in the road. He sees him close to him. And actually, probably was a neighbor. And likewise, a Levite. When he came to the place and saw him pass by the other side, too, and Levites, the tribe of Levi, were people that would help take care of the temple and do a variety of things. And so, and this is where actually the priestly family would come out of. And so, you know, these would be people who should know better also, and yet they pass by on the other side. Then Jesus, as he liked to do, is shock his audience a little bit, and he says, but a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. And now people are like, oh, a Samaritan, what is he going to do? Because Samaritans were half-breeds. Samaritans were pagans. Samaritans were less than human in their viewpoint. And Jesus said, and when he saw him, he had compassion. That would have been completely different than what they were anticipating. He had compassion. He went to him. He bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn, and he took care of him. So he's completely gone out of his way. He sees this person that is beaten, battered, bloodied, and he moved with such compassion that he decided that somebody had to take care of him, and there's nobody else around, so he did it. And then the very next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him. And whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. So Jesus asked the lawyer, he says, so what do you think? Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And the man responded, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said, you go and do likewise. And really, when you take a look at this parable, Jesus is turning this lawyer's question sideways a bit, because the lawyer wanted to know, who is my neighbor? And Jesus said, wrong question. The right question is, are you a good neighbor wherever you are? Are you the good neighbor, you know, when you're at work? Are you that good neighbor there? Are you a good neighbor when you're at a restaurant and you know, to the people around you and to the server who's taking care of you? Are you a good neighbor when you're on vacation? Are you a good neighbor on the airplane as you're flying? And do you recognize, and part of that is just recognizing the humanity of the people around you, and trying to overcome our biases. Yeah, I flew on Southwest. I have to say, I'd never flown on Southwest before. I was a little, wasn't so thrilled that you actually have to find your own seat when you get on board. But that was no problem. Got an aisle seat like that. And actually, more leg room than any plane I've been on lately. So I kind of like that too. And so as we were loading up in Dallas, Texas, to come back, I'm sitting there and everybody has pretty much loaded in. And all of a sudden, this guy wearing an Orioles shirt, tattered, it was kind of cut up, so it had a kind of a muscle shirt, and he was kind of a buffed guy, and he probably stood about 6'3", 6'4". He had, you know, kind of that Irishy-looking guy, except for his head was shaved. His hair was naturally red, big giant mohawk with dreadlocks tapered down. So it was kind of curved over like this. And he's bringing on two big suitcases. I'm like, huh, look at that. You know, and he's coming in, and he's looking around to find a place to sit. And he points to a seat between these two people, says, hey, can I sit right there? And so he puts the suitcases up. And the lady that gets up, and the older lady, she gets up, and she, you know, he's getting by her, and she turns and looks to the back of the plane, and it looks like there was this horror on her face, like, somebody please help me. You know, you could tell she was not thrilled. She was not excited about that guy being there. But I kind of watched him, and he was like the happiest guy and talked her ear off, you know. And so it was kind of interesting. And I think that she actually warmed up to him because she discovered he's human. So if we're going to love our neighbors, we have to get to as ourselves, and the word there is ourselves too, and we have to recognize our shared humanity. And part of recognizing our shared humanity, it requires dwelling. It requires living among different people. It requires spending time with our neighbors or with those that are around us, trying to get to know them a little bit, trying to understand who they are. And we're going to be talking about that more throughout February, because it was interesting as I've been looking at this whole love your enemy and love your neighbor. There's a magazine that has written a lot of stuff about this, and it's Psychology Today. Isn't that interesting? And about the psychological benefits and the background of what Jesus was telling us to do. And part of what they've discovered is we need to spend time getting to know those around us. You know, Jesus set that example for us. Tells us that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, lived among us, tented among us. And we have seen His glory. The glory is the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. And the reason they could see His glory was because He was out and about among them. He talked to them. He taught them. He ate with them. He went to different dinner parties. He went to dinner party of the tax collector. He went to dinner parties with Pharisees. He went to dinner parties. He went to a wedding. And we sometimes what we do is we start isolating ourselves, or we just stay with our friends or the people who are very similar to us, and we don't recognize the similarities that we have with other groups. Doing is we start focusing on things that are not, you know, that are divisive instead of things that unify us. And Jesus coming was not only to save us, but also to understand us, to sympathize with us. And that's the very next thing. If we're going to recognize our shared humanity, and recognizing it, it leads us to sympathize, to understand the feelings, to understand the plight of somebody else. In Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15, it says this, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin." So there is that sympathy that we have. Now, when that guy walked into the airplane the way that he did, I'm pretty sure most people thought, don't sit next to me. Don't sit next to me. And when that lady looked back at all of us, I'm sure a lot of us were like, we get it. We understand. But she got to experience something, and if anybody paid attention, got to see that they kind of got chatting and talking and kind of enjoyed, they seemed to enjoy the flight. But I'm sure she had everybody's sympathy at the beginning. And that's an understanding of people's feelings. It's an understanding that people who are very different from us really aren't that different, because they want the same things. They want places to live that are safe and secure. They want their children to do better than they have done. They want their children to have a good education. They want to live their life in such a way that they can enjoy the company of their friends and their family. They want to be treated with dignity and respect. They want people to demonstrate to them kindness. And those are things that we understand. And we understand when somebody slights them or says a disparaging remark, we understand how that harms them. When Jesus came, he understood our weaknesses because he set aside his omnipotence and took on human flesh without stopping being God, and he got tired. He got hungry. He was tempted, but without sin. So he understood and he could sympathize with us. This, I've mentioned a couple times in different settings that I just finished a biography of Frederick Douglass. And since it's February is Black History Month, let me just give Frederick Douglass's book a plug. It is a biography of Frederick Douglass that was written by Booker T. Washington. So it actually has an interesting take and on Frederick Douglass's life. And as you read his life, especially by somebody that lived just a couple decades past the death of Frederick Douglass, you just start seeing that he just wanted what we all want, freedom. And he talked to the African-American people then. He says, you learn a trade. Become invaluable to the community. And seek a good education. When he was in a parade after the Civil War in Philadelphia, nobody wanted to be around him because politics, and they were worried, that they might lose an election, so they didn't want to be that close to him. And so finally, a couple of men came up alongside him and said, "Yes, we'll walk with you, to the meeting house, to the convention hall." And as he was walking, he happened to catch and glimpse, and he recognized her, was the daughter of the man who used to own him. And he immediately left the parade. And people were like, "Oh, poor lady, he's really going to give her what for?" And he went over and he showed respect and kindness and talked to her and inquired about her well-being, because he understood that probably being there was very difficult for her. He understood how she was probably feeling. And people marveled at that. So we understand the sympathy, and that's important, but there's also something that's a little deeper than sympathy, and that's empathy, where we're not just understanding somebody's feelings, but when we're there with them, we're starting to feel their feelings. We're kind of sharing how they're feeling at the moment. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, it says this: when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion for them. So compassion is carrying out that empathy. He's not just sympathizing, but his heart is actually going out to them. He's feeling because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He as a good shepherd, he understood what that meant. He understood their plight. And then he also, his heart bled for them because he saw the result of them just not having a shepherd to lead them. So there's that empathy. And when we're able to start to sympathize with people who are a little bit different than us, and sympathize with our neighbors, to sympathize with our enemies, then eventually that empathy will start to develop. Another book that I'm reading is American Ulysses. It's about Ulysses S. Grant. That's another book I wholeheartedly recommend. I love reading this book. It's the writing is fresh, it's insightful, and Ulysses S. Grant is so much a more complicated man than what we've been taught by history. So in just where I just finished up the last couple of days, Grant is in Tennessee. He just had his first major victory, 14,000 to 20,000 prisoners he just took. The fort surrendered to him. He's a brigadier general, so he's general who was a fellow classmate from West Point, but the Confederate general sent out a letter asking for conditions for surrender. And Grant replied, "No conditions, unconditional surrender. That's the condition." So the man responded, the general responded to him, Buckner, and he said, his response was, "Okay, we accept your ungenerous terms." And so here he is, he's waiting for Grant to come in, and Grant's aide actually used to teach both of them at West Point. And as they came in, the aide refused to shake his hand, but Grant shook his hand. And the man was so put at ease, this Confederate general was so put at ease because Grant was so kind to him. And as they were talking and, and he's making arrangements for them to go north, as prisoners, and somebody on the Union side says, "Well, you're going to have them stack the guns, in front of the Union soldiers and him surrender the sword to you, because that's what you do, And Grant said, "Absolutely not. They are fellow Americans. They're our countrymen, and we are not going to humiliate them." Because he understood what it was like to be humiliated earlier in his life, in his career. And as General Buckner was getting onto the riverboat, Grant went over to him and he said, "Listen, I know when you get up there, you're not going to have any cash. If you need anything, you let me know. My purse is yours." He did that because that man loaned him about 20 years earlier money. But Grant, who had suffered some humiliation in his life, understood the humiliation and he was sharing in their pain. So while the term unconditional surrender Grant stuck, his unconditional terms were actually pretty nice. And there's that empathy. And we need to learn to be able to share with people that we disagree with, the anguish that they go through, the joy that they go through, and we should be able to share that with them. But the reality is, none of this happens unless there's a change of heart, a change of our hearts. And 1 John chapter 3, verse 17 says this, "If anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide with him?" Basically, we're saying if we see somebody in need, especially somebody that is, within a faith community or somebody who is closed, but it is about anybody. If we see anybody who is in need and we actually have the wherewithal to help that person in need and we do nothing, then God's love does not abide in us. So there has to be a change of heart. And that comes with our understanding of who Christ is and our need for him. John 3:16, our favorite verse out of the Bible. For God so loved the world, the entire world, everybody. That he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. We recognize that at the very start, that as we stand before the cross of Jesus Christ, as we stand before God, we are all equals. We are all human, and we all need Jesus. Not any of us need Jesus less than another person. No one needs Jesus more than the next person. We all need Jesus at one time or another at the same way, that saving way where we recognize there's nothing in and of ourselves that can redeem us, but we confess Christ as Lord and Savior, and he saves us. About 10 or 15 years before Frederick Douglass's death, and this would have been about 10 years probably after the Civil War, there's an amazing encounter that he had. He was asked to come see a man who was on his deathbed. And Frederick Douglass knew that was going to be a difficult meeting because the man that had asked him was Captain Auld, who used to own Frederick Douglass. And as Frederick Douglass would go around telling his story about how he escaped slavery, and the Auld family were very popular in the well-respected family in Baltimore, And Frederick Douglass made his getaway out of Baltimore into heading north into Philadelphia, then New York City, and then up to Boston. As he told a story about how he escaped and had his former owner was Captain Auld, well, Captain Auld kind of became kind of a villain, and he did not like that. So there were some hurt feelings on both sides, and as Frederick Douglass sat there in the room with Captain Auld, and they were sitting there, and they just kind of sat quiet, weeping. And Auld began to talk to him and apologize to him. And Frederick Douglass and he started having this conversation, and Frederick Douglass said all of a sudden it dawned on him that they were both born into this mess. That they had no choice, but they were both kind of victims of their birth. One the slave owner, one the slave. And as that realization came, and as he was looking at this man and talking to him, and the Auld family was always very kind to him. Now, other parts who owned him or that they farmed him out, they weren't so nice to him. But he looked at Captain Auld and he said this, "I didn't run away from you. I ran for freedom. It wasn't you." That is an amazing gift to give a dying man who is living with guilt. And it's because he recognized in that moment their shared humanity. We have to recognize our shared humanity with those around us.